So we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 46 probably. Tapasibhyo dikho yogi, jnanibhyo pi mipto dikaha, karmibhyascha dikho yogi, tasmad yogi bhavarjana. Tapasibhya, then the ascetics, adhika, greater, yogi, the yogi, jnanibhya, then the wise, api, also, mataha, considered, adhika, greater, karmibhya, then the fruit of workers, cha, also, adhika, greater, yogi, the yogi, tasmat, therefore, yogi, a transcendentalist, bhava, just become, Arjuna, O Arjuna. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruit of worker. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Purport. When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the Supreme Absolute. Such a process is named differently by various practitioners in terms of the particular method adopted. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called karma yoga. When it is predominantly empirical, it is called jnana yoga. And when it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Supreme Lord, it is called bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is the ultimate perfection of all yogis, as will be explained in the next verse. The Lord has confirmed herein the superiority of yoga, but he has not mentioned that it is better than bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is a full spiritual knowledge, and therefore nothing can excel it. Asceticism without self-realized knowledge is imperfect. Empiric knowledge without surrender to the Supreme Lord is also imperfect. And fruitive work without Krishna consciousness is a waste of time. Therefore, the most highly praised form of yoga performance mentioned here is bhakti yoga, and this is still more clearly explained in the next verse. Tapasibhyo dikho yogi jnani jnani bhyopi mukto dikaha karmi vyascha dikho yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjana. A yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruit of worker. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Krishna is mentioning different kinds of yogis, from the tapasvis to the jnanis to the karmis. Generally, Krishna doesn't mention very much about tapasvis, Bhagavad Gita, as far as I can remember. Do you know any other place where Krishna mentions the tapasvis? 18,
verses 50 to 55.
What's that?
18, 50 to 55.
You mean buddhya vishuddhya yukto jitatmana yam yaja shabda jin vishaya tyakva raga dvesha vyasicha vivakta de shalagvasi yatavak kaya manasa dhyana yoga puro nityam vairagya samapashitya ahankara valam darpam kamakrota puragraham Yimucham nirma shanto brahmabhuyaya kalpate.
Those words.
Being purified by one's intelligence and engaging the mind with determination, controlling the mind with determination. One who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, controls his mind and senses, is always in trance. Such a person gradually attains to the perfection of self-realization. So, more or less. Something about, but I think that's also more or less the Ashtanga Yoga practice that he's talking about, with the Buddhya Vishuddhya Yukta. It's the tapasvis, I guess, for instance, Sri Rastra was considered tapasvi. He was, in the sense that when he went into the forest to, as a dhira, to reach perfection. There's Naradamas and then there's dhiras. Dhiras are those who are, they don't really understand the ultimate perfection, but they go through the process of austerity and meditation in order to get usually Brahman realization as liberation. But the Naratamas, Narottamas, are those who actually know the ultimate goal is Krishna. In any case, generally speaking, as Prabhupada will go over in the next verse, the purport, that he goes from Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Dhyana Yoga. So, where the tapasvis are concluded within the Dhyana Yoga process. And it's also mentioned in the 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. Tesham sadatam yuktanam bhajantam pratipuravakam tadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upyanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to worshipping me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. It's interesting that Prabhupada says there, when one knows that the goal of life is Krishna, but one is addicted to the results of one's activities, then he's said to be acting in karma yoga. And when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, one is said to be acting in buddhi yoga, of jnana yoga. When one knows that the goal of life is Krishna and seeks Krishna completely in devotional service, then he's said to be acting in buddhi yoga, which is the highest perfection. Now, what's the difference between all these things? In the next verse, Prabhupada will say, when there's a little bit, there's some detachment, some knowledge, it's said to be karma yoga. When that increases, it's said to be jnana yoga. And when it still increases further, it's said to be astanga yoga. And when it becomes perfect or full, then it's said to be bhakti yoga, or Krishna consciousness. Now, practically speaking, karma yoga, giving up the results of one's activities and acting dutifully, at least takes away the aspect of trying to be the controller of the material world. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam yatmamam shanti richate. Generally speaking, there are three different levels of consciousness. In the mode of ignorance, we think we're the controllers and the enjoyer, the controllers, the proprietors, and the controllers. And the mode of passion, we think we're the enjoyers. And the mode of ignorance, the mode of goodness, we think we're the friends of everyone. We're the ones who are delivering everyone. Now, karma yoga takes away this aspect that we're the proprietors and we're the controllers, acting dutifully. When we take to jnana yoga, we learn that we're not the enjoyers, that we're the sufferers. And when we take to the process of Astanga Yoga, then we understand what the goal of life is Krishna. And when we actually see Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness, then we find out that Krishna is actually the real friend of everyone, including ourselves. Nimitra matram bhavasavasachin. And our perfection has become Krishna's instrument, not to become, take his place. Or as Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, fifth chapter, verse number 34, that if one knows, one has some, you can look that up. So it's 2534. Etam Vishuddhiya Yuk Book, Etam, 34. 2534. Let's try 1534. Actually, 1534. Etam. No, let's try 32 then. Etam sushushitam brahmam tapatraya tukishitam. Yet ishare bhagavati karma something bhavita. Pramita. Then Prabhupada writes in the purport that if one is a learned person, then he should actually try to convince people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not to decry Krishna and try and take his place. If one has some ability to manage, like Arjuna was fighting, at the beginning he was reluctant to fight for Krishna, but later on his decision was changed and he was willing to fight for Krishna. So if one has some ability to manage, then he should manage like Arjuna and fight for Krishna's cause. If one has some resources, then one should utilize those resources in Krishna's service. But after all, the best thing is that one should devote himself to hearing and chanting about Krishna. But in the absence of such propensity, one should dovetail with whatever one desires and dovetail that in Krishna's service, and that will bring that one to perfection. So some people, some devotees, especially in the beginning, were suffering. Or we want some comfort. This is known as, anyhow, that's called the artha and the artis. So for them, karma yoga is the primary objective. Because by acting dutifully, we get rid of a lot of our sinful desires. Everyone is suffering because of sinful desires. As Prahlad Maharaj said, there's no enemy in this world except for the uncontrolled mind. So as a reaction for our past sinful activities, especially sense gratification, externally we may follow, and that will give us some relief, but we're harassed by material desires, especially for eating sometimes. During a fast day, we get harassed by eating. Till finally we surrender. And we keep on looking at a watch. Oh, two more hours. And then sleeping, of course, when you're young and you're fully engaged in Krishna service, then sometimes you can do without sleep. But after a while, sleep catches up with us, and that pillow looks like heaven. When you merge into the pillow, it looks like you've gone to heaven. And of course, the main thing, especially in modern society, is mating and defending. Previously, people were not so much harassed by mating and defending, although mating and defending are always the primary activities in the material world. But because people were generally, they didn't get so much to eat, and they didn't have so many possessions, therefore there was not such, you know, mating was not so much on their mind all the time, because they knew it entailed a lot of responsibility, and they were more hungry than anything else. And they didn't really know if they needed another mouth to feed. And as far as offending, people were not so aggressive usually in most parts of the world. I mean, even previously, people could keep their doors locked and they didn't have to worry about someone coming stealing everything, including themselves. So people were less absorbed, but always absorbed in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But more decided more on eating and sleeping, making sure that they had a place to eat, enough to eat, family had enough to eat, and that they had some place, a shelter. Now it's switched over to mating and defending, because people think they have enough to eat and they have shelter. At least they used to before society gets turned upside down. So, in that sense, karma yoga was appreciated, because karma yoga, acting dutifully, means that you can't just do anything you want. You have to do what you're supposed to do. And that means things like illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, intoxication are no-nos, and people didn't even consider them. Even in modern Indian society, where people are just going down, becoming degraded at the speed of light very rapidly, then still, you know, there's still within the culture some idea that especially meat eating is not a good idea. There's some sentiment to protect the cow. There's some sentiment that you should actually get married. maybe in a few Western countries, people still have that idea that marriage is not so antiquated. Marriage is meant for the Neanderthal men and women, but modern men and women don't even consider it. It's a partnership. And, of course, the other principles like intoxication and things like that, people couldn't afford intoxication. If you go to Vrindavan, you can see the only people who can afford intoxication there are the sadhus. Because they're all growing marijuana plants. they're meditating. Instead of meditating on a Tulsi plant, they meditate on the marijuana plant. I remember I used to do parikram every day around, you know, the Goshal. And there were some sadhus there, and they had this marijuana plant. And they were sitting around meditating on the marijuana plant every time I saw them. In any case, karma yoga gives one the opportunity to control the mind more, to stop activities which are considered to be sinful. And therefore one gets relief. As soon as one stops those activities, they don't bother one. It's not that one gives up, for instance, sex life or eating or sleeping or even defending, but the unnecessary meditation on them is just produces unnecessary anxiety. That eating, sleeping, mating, defending, they all have their place, but they have a place within the natural realm of the laws of material nature. And when one becomes free from that, then the next stage is when one becomes peaceful and one can hear. One feels that actually one is satisfied, the senses become satisfied, so one is not so in anxiety about gratifying them. Then one can hear, and that begins the process of Jnana Yoga, when you can hear. We can hear, for instance, previously there were Shuti Dharas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can hear very nicely, so in the Keshava Kajmi, the Pandit, he recited 100 verses glorifying the Ganges. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, maybe I can analyze one of the verses. Keshava Kajmi Pandit said, sure, go ahead and do it. I think he picked out the 64th verse about the river Ganges and the goddess of fortune, and he glorified the river Ganges in that way. And he analyzed it with 5 faults and 5 embellishments. He memorized it word for word. So the Keshava Kajmi Pandit was amazed. He said, how could you possibly have memorized it? Did you? So he said, well, you know, I'm just a grammar student, but some people have this gift of being a Shutidhar. Just so happens that I'm a Shutidhar, so I remember. And I'll analyze it. I don't know, you know, I don't know all this embellishments and this, but still I've read some grammar books and I can remember according to the grammar book what it said, so I'll analyze it according to the grammar book, see if you like it or not. So he analyzed it. Similarly, there's this Prabhupada tells a story of one Brahmin who was by the bank of the Ganges, and 2 Englishmen at that time, it was during the colonial times, got into a heated argument that wound up in a fight. And because it was a fight, they went to court. And they called the Brahmin as a witness. And he related word for word exactly what the 2 Englishmen said. Which was amazing that he could remember everything. What was even more amazing is that this particular Brahmin didn't speak any English. Now that's the standard of a good memory. You can get a memory like that, you can easily learn a couple of languages in a day or two. So people who can actually hear, they can actually, first of all, they remember. And as I've gone over before, when you can remember something, you can think about it and try to understand it, perceive it. And when you think about it and perceive it, then you can actually come to the platform not only of applying it in one's life and seeing if it works or not, and gradually becoming more expert at it. And as we become more expert, then become more and more convinced that this is a good thing to do. And then you develop whatever its qualities are. You become expert. You become at that. Maybe you can note it as an expert. So the same thing is in spiritual life. As one applies, if one can hear peacefully the philosophy, then one can actually start remembering it and start understanding it, start applying it, start experiencing it. And that experience, in the beginning, is we want to realize that we're not this body, that we're eternal. So the jignasus, they want to get out of suffering entirely. Not only they want this mental suffering to end, this unnecessary agitation in the mind, they want to have some peaceful, comfortable situation, but they actually want to realize who they really are and end all the material entanglement altogether. So then they become jnanis, and they realize Brahman. They realize that they're eternal souls. So that's all good and said, but bhakti or love is what actually people are looking for. Now that we love our bodies, and therefore we're already in love. Love is natural for us. We can't give up love because that's the nature of the soul, is to love. But now we've fallen in love with our gross and subtle bodies. As I've said many times, which I'll repeat just in case someone didn't hear it, then in the morning we look into the mirror and we ask the mirror, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the greatest of them all? And immediately the mirror responds, as if it was the super soul speaking within our heart, as the heart of Brahma. The mirror tells us immediately, within our heart, my dear soul, you're actually, after so many pious activities and so much, because you're such a nice soul, therefore it's being revealed to you, the deity in the mirror. So please, make a vow with great determination, you're going to render uninterrupted, unalloyed service to that deity in the mirror today. We fold our hands and say, yes, I'm inspired and I'm enlightened what the purpose of my existence is, and I vow to render unalloyed, uninterrupted service to my deity. And so, if we're a little pious and it's early in the morning, we take a shower in the name of Abhishek. We clean the deity. We clothe the deity, we decorate the deity, we offer food to the deity, and then we go out into the world to spread the glories of the deity everywhere. And that's our Sankirtan. Sometimes we even publish books about our deity, and we have, you know, pictures of our deity that we send out on Facebook. So people can actually offer some praise and appreciation. They can express their liking and glorify the deity. That way they make some advancement. So everyone's in love. The question is what we're in love with, that's all. Now in karma yoga, we're still in love with our bodies. We're just trying to make our mind a little bit more peaceful. In jnana yoga, we're a little less in love with our body, but we're still in love with our false ego. That I am Brahma. I am God. So one has given up more or less the gross and something of the subtle conception, but one cannot give up the false ego. That I am Brahman. So I'm not the controller here in the material world, but who cares about being the controller here? It's useless. It's all illusory anyhow. I'm not the enjoyer, but there's nothing to enjoy here. But I am the God. I am the Supreme. I am the benefactor. And I can teach others how to become God too, if you surrender to me, the ultimate God. So one cannot give up the false ego of being the center of the universe. But in bhakti yoga, we discover who the actual object of affection and love is. We actually realize that actually I have to love something, and therefore right now I only love myself, although I pretend I love others. But actually when I'm loving this body, when I'm loving other things in relation to the body, it's really just, the only one I really appreciate ultimately is myself. But I can't, just sitting there loving myself doesn't really do it for me. I need a little bit more than that. Because after all, I'm only 1/10,000th the size of Tip Aaron's size. So there's only so much love I can give to myself. You're great. You're marvelous. Yes, yes, say more. Anything else? Yes, I love you. Yes, I know I love myself too. But when we find out what the actual object of love is, namely Krishna, then our love expands unlimitedly. Then we can actually begin real life again. So that's called bhakti yoga. When one knows that the goal of life is Krishna and seeks Krishna completely. And giving up the other things like karma yoga and jnana yoga, which are considered to be nidra karma bhakti. Nidra karma yoga. So that's what Krishna is more or less explaining here. That if we take to the process of bhakti, then we just have to learn how to focus our mind on Krishna and give our love to Him. And then gradually our contamination of jnana yoga and karma yoga will gradually diminish and will be situated in actually bhakti yoga. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. I think it's very funny about self-worship in the mirror. But also there is self-hate.
Well, they don't. Nowadays they take the selfie. Smile, yes. You see people walking around, at least in some place, with a stick and a camera just... Everywhere they're going, it's all, you know, lead to all their friends on Facebook, whatever. Yes, look at him. Yeah, smile. Yeah.
At the same time, they say that about 80% of our thoughts are self-negative. We think bad about ourselves.
Well, that's the modern day. There are 7 indirect rasas. And that's one of the indirect rasas called the ghastly rasa. Because when you're in the mode of ignorance, then you have to be more ghastly than everyone else. You're competing to become the most ghastly. So you can see the people as they get in the mode of ignorance, you know, they put, you know, a tattoo on their face, and then someone else puts 5 earrings to better them. Someone else puts something through their tongue and through their eyelids and whatever, you know. Then it's, you know, who's the most in the mode of ignorance? That's like Hirani, as Prahlad Maharaj said, Tat Sada Manye Surya Varyade. You're not just a demon, Dad, but you're the biggest demon. Okay, you're at least he said, I'm not just a demon, I'm the biggest demon. Yeah. My son's not so bad. He's a little off. Everyone's into this, being the best of something. Just like people get together and they talk about how, you know, what a miserable life they have. And they're just waiting, you know. They don't realize how miserable life can get. I can tell you my miserable story. You know, or I did this bad deed. Well, you know, you don't know what I did. Everyone's trying to outdo each other, even in a bad way. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Karantaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.